Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
I'm back, baby. I'm back.
You are back. You are back, Matt. You are back after four idle weeks.
Yeah, we were talking about it just pre-pod, and I'm just like, how has it been, you know, 4 weeks? I mean, I was saying to you, Joe, yeah, three months since I got married, and last weekend was the first weekend I've had off.
Wait, what? It's been 3 months since you got
married? 3 months since I got married. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just been a whirlwind year as things turn to somewhat normality. I guess, you know, we've even had Nam, which I missed because I wasn't really on the pod or paying any attention to.
Which is also, in itself, unbelievable that you, Matt Knight, missed Nam.
First time I haven't been since 2017. So yeah, I missed a lot of friends. It sounds like a lot of friends weren't even there. Roland and Boss didn't have a booth, so we weren't there this year. But yeah, it's just a lot feels like it's just happened over the last few months. And things seem to be picking up remarkable pace, both in the guitar world, it seems, and also in life, general life.
It does feel like that. It does feel like the guitar world has opened up. I kind of echo what you're saying almost just about Nam. Like, I feel like I've gone from being like, oh yeah, stuff is sort of a manageable pace. And I think it's that manageable pace that you get used to because of everything that's happened over the last couple of years. All of a sudden, everything's opened back up and been a thing again. And I've been like, oh God, just trying to keep up with everything has been...
You know, not to say that COVID has disappeared or, you know, changed the lives of many hundreds of thousands of people, you know, personally or in as well as indirectly. But, you know, I had a bunch of my work team come over. First time I'd seen them all in person as a group since they joined my team.
Wow.
October 20. That's just Europe. So Hungary, Denmark, Italy, France, the UK. Obviously, I have one person there, and Belgium. Wow. And they all started on my team in October 2020. So that was already in the pandemic. And you just think, That feels so long ago. Well, I mean, it was 2 years ago. You know, it feels so long ago. And it's the first time that loads of them had seen each other face to face. You know, I think the first comment from one of the guys to the other was like, oh, you have legs, because they'd only ever seen them on a Teams call. And when they all came over, they were like, it's amazing. Like, no one's wearing a mask, or, you know, everything feels like normal. And I'm like, yeah, it's... You know, I think we were the first country to kind of do that.
Oh, were we? Oh, right.
Yeah, so a lot of places that they'd come from had been, I think apart from maybe Denmark, a lot of other places still been like relatively cautious.
I see.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, Scandinavia was quick to the mark of
Yeah, Scandinavia did things very differently, I think, because they were very late to the mark in terms of any sort of lockdown as well. But unfortunately, Japan still not very open.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I follow a lot of Japanese vloggers and podcasters. And Japan is still completely closed to tourists at the moment. So no Japan for me in the future. I was listening to a podcast the other day where they were talking about Hard Off. And it made me remember how good Hard Off was. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to go back to Japan. And
the ultimate pre-owned guitar shop.
Exactly. That's not really even a guitar shop. Yeah. it feels like, I think even this year, I've been to 6 or 7 gigs so far. And like, you know, relatively big bands, and got another 3 or 4 booked in. Like, it's just amazing to go out and see some people and see some music, although a distinct lack of amplifiers anywhere to be seen in pretty much all the gigs that I've been to, apart from the small pub gigs.
Well, you go to larger shows than me, Matt. I think my taste tends to be a little bit more niche, but certainly I'm starting to book up shows as well, and I've spoken about it on the last few, some of the month of episodes that you haven't been on, where I've been going to shows, and it's funny to see the bands that aren't playing with amplifiers to the bands that are playing with amplifiers. Maybe we'll go into this later in the podcast, but it has turned me around absolutely. You know, like, if you take 6 months ago me, or any sort of pandemic version of this podcast, I was being like, absolutely. I think everything, you know, why wouldn't you want to go Class D digital? Why wouldn't you want to have stuff that's lightweight, that's small? Having now watch gigs, I was like, oh, that's why. Because it's still all rubbish. I am fully now back in Valve stroke solid state territory. I don't care how much things weigh. I know weight was a big thing for me for a long time. Not just the fact that I've put on weight during lockdown, but the weight of gear, I was like, yeah, I care about this stuff. I don't care about this stuff anymore. We'll go into it later in the podcast, but absolutely, having watched gigs, I'm like, yeah, the people that care about lightweight stuff or digital stuff are the people that don't gig. Because if you gig, there is an undeniable massive gulf. Still a massive gulf. No matter what size gig you're going to, there's a huge gulf there. And so that's the hill I'm dying on. But
yeah, I think I'm sure there's lots to dive into there. But I mean, even, I guess it's a mix now, isn't it? I'm seeing I guess one of the gigs that I went to during the space of the month that I wasn't on, which we can touch on very briefly, was I saw the best, possibly, I would say, the best live band I've ever seen. I've seen them 5 times now, and that's Meshuggah. And I saw them play at the Royal Albert Hall, which was just what a venue to see such just immense music. And of course, like, so much of their sound and vibe is just all just like, there's nothing on stage at all.
They went back to Mesa Boogie recently, didn't they?
I don't know whether the last live album is was Real Amps, or the last album they recorded, which came out recently, Immutable, if whether that's got Real Amps on it or not, because the album before that did have. But again, like, an ampler stage. But it, the reason I mention it is the band that supported was a band called Zeal and Ardor. Have you ever heard
of this? Oh, my goodness. You went to this same gig. So actually, quite a few of the Polymath band members went to this gig.
Oh, really?
But actually, there you go. But not so much for Meshuggah. Meshuggah definitely, because, you know, Meshuggah are great. But actually, for Zeal and Ardor, there are bands that we all really love. Explain. Yeah. I'd love to hear what you thought. Define Zeal and Ardor.
Do you know, it was weird, because my mate kind of described, he sort of said, oh, if you've never heard of them, like, they've got roots in a lot of like blues music, and like, his lyrics and his themes.
Yeah, Chain Gang Blues is, it's like Chain Gang Blues meets tech metal, I would say. That's how I'd describe that band.
And three singers, including the lead guitarist, which I was just like, the funny thing was, the two just singers, one was really small and really skinny, and one was like quite big with like really long hair. They were like the total opposites of each other. But I tell you what really stuck out for me in that band was the sound, the bass tone. the bass tone was just immense. I have no idea what, again, no amps, which is why I mentioned it. It was all just like, I'm pretty sure it was all, it must have been Helix, because I'm sure the guitar player, one of the guitar players was using a Shuriken.
Right, really? Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure, but the bass sounded amazing.
It does depend what record you listen to of theirs, but they didn't actually even always have a drummer.
Really?
That stuff is just sequenced.
You know? Oh, they're Swiss. I didn't even realise they were Swiss. but yeah, I thought, you know, when you listen to it, you can go, this is why everyone like kneels before Meshuggah, because that band effectively influenced everything. Like, in terms of that, there's just no denying that Meshuggah are just so unbelievably influential in of that.
If you want to talk about heavy guitar tones and taking it to the next level of heavy guitar tones, I think Meshuggah will always go down as being one of the most important bands for that sort of thing.
Absolutely. But I don't think seeing them live was probably necessarily the best way to get into that band. I feel that you probably have to kind of listen to them on record, and the record is perhaps a bit more of an experience. But live, they were pretty mental. I was like, it was heavy, it was loud. I mean, it was a great place to see them, like Albert Hall, amazing venue.
How many times have you seen Meshuggah, Matt?
Five. Wow. Yeah, five times. And yes, you know, Arctangent Festival was obviously probably the biggest crowd I've seen them play in front of.
Really? Wow. That was the biggest crowd.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing,
was like 5,000, 7,000 maybe? At Arctangent, I think.
Yeah, I think the thing about Meshuggah is they did a live album about 10 years ago, and a live DVD. And like, whenever you saw gigs in like Europe, they were always relatively small. And then as soon as they played Japan, they were playing like these huge, huge arenas. And I think they're influence is far and wide, but their following is still very cult in a lot of places,
right,
because they are, you know, a very, very distinct band. But to be fair, the best time I ever saw them was actually the second time I ever saw them, which was the second time at Concord 2 in Brighton, and that gig was just amazing.
I believe you saw them at Concord 2. Dear listener, just to put in perspective, I don't know the capacity on Concord 2.
I'm just going to have a look at it.
It's a weird layout. It feels sub 1,000.
Like, it's 600 people.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm pretty sure it wasn't sold out either.
That is... I mean, I love... The great thing about the Concord 2 is the sound there is incredible. It's very, very good. And it's one of those venues that seems to get bands ahead of their station. Like, I've seen... I've seen Antimusk there, who were the iteration after the Mars Volta. You tend to see great, you know, pretty well-to-do bands there in a very small venue, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen a lot of amazing gigs there. Talking of Meshuggah, the other side of the coin of Meshuggah that pretty much are the godfathers of the kind of modern djent movement, Sixth, have also reformed with the original lineup for a one-off gig, the Electric Ballroom in November. Wow. So I have tickets to that as well, which will be...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Amazing. But yeah, seen some pretty good bands in some pretty small venues. And that's what I'm all about. I know it sounds a bit snobby, but there's been a few bands recently where I'm like, oh, they're playing. And then you look where they're playing and you're like, oh, do you know what? I don't really want to go and watch a band at the O2. I know that sounds really lame, but
No, that's not lame. That's exactly how I feel about all shows. I don't want to go and stand at the back and see people. Like, you know, it annoys me more than anything that one of my favourite bands in the world are The Cure. And if you go and watch The Cure at a gig, the chances are that that show will have a golden circle. And I don't know if Golden Circle exists outside of the UK. Whenever I see shows in Europe, it feels like they have their stages laid out much better. But certainly in the UK, and I might be, you know, this might be obvious to everyone. I might have missed something that everyone has. But a Golden Circle means that if you pay a bunch extra, you actually get to stand and watch the band. And if you don't pay that bunch extra, you've still paid £100 plus for the ticket, but you are so far back that you have to watch them on a TV screen anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
That's every Cure show I've ever been to. And yeah. I love those guys. I don't think they're responsible for it, by the way.
Very, very often, I guess, or not very often, you do get a band where they're like, oh, we want to play like some club shows or something like that. Or perhaps a band that's fallen out of favour, that's come back into favour, still aren't big enough to play the biggest of venues, but just enough to play like 4,000 or 5,000 cap venues, which is why I'm lucky enough to have tickets to see Limp Bizkit at the Brixton O2. It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good.
This is what? How many years are between us, Matt? Like 4, 5, something like that?
Three years
between us. That clearly is enough.
Because
absolutely not care about the things that you.
Well, I guess when Rolling was number one in the UK, that was what, 2000.
That seemed like 2000? Old Limp Bizkit for me. That seems like sellout level Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, it was, and it was great at the time, and then you forget about it for 20 years, and then you come back to it 20 years later, and you're like, this is brilliant. 2000, so I would have been 13, so you'd have been 16. Wow. So you would have probably been
my first, you know. Yeah, my first Reading Festival was 1999, so yeah.
Oh, that was a good year. Rage Against the Machine was still doing it then, and they're still doing it now.
Yeah, there you go.
I always think Reading has no offense to anyone that's played Reading, and I have been a few times, and you know, on the odd day trip, never really done the camping thing. The lineup seems the same every year. But you know, you would have seen, well, Red Hot Chili Peppers, they definitely, that was one of the headlines. Blur and the Charlatans, that's a weird one for
it was good.
Charlatans, was Chemical good. Brothers though, definitely would have been into the Chemical Brothers then.
It was very good. 2000 was better. I remember 2000 quite, quite distinctly, because at Reading 2000 you had Slipknot headlining, but they foolishly put Blink-182 on the band before, and that meant that you had all of the punk rockers and all of the metal guys who at that point in the UK, dear listener, hated each other. So all the guys wearing boiler suits who don't shower. And all of the people in like baggy shorts with bleach blonde hair, all having to share the same space. And of course, all the people who wanted to see Slipknot were trying to get through to the front. All the guys who were there to see Blink wanted to be at the front. And it caused such fights. And there was just such There was such a constant battle, a constant punch up going on at the front of that stage. It was one of the worst years for, I think, like violence at Reading.
You know? It's crazy, isn't it? Like, if you go back to, when we were like 13, 14, 15, whatever, and you look at the bands that were headlining and the bands were like below it, and you go, where are some of these bands now? And how some have like endured like such a massive like career length. I mean, that day, I'm just looking here, the Super Suckers, followed by A, followed by Daphne and Celeste. Honestly, was that the year that they just got bottles of...
Yeah, I remember I was there. I remember the Daphne and Celeste year. Dear listener, unless you are UK-based, you will not know who Daphne and Celeste are. Please go and check them out. In fact, there are definitely videos of Daphne and Celeste getting... They had... And this is terrible. Retrospectively, this isn't a good thing, but this is something that occurred at Reading. They were bottled off stage, but it was like, it was awful.
They lasted like three songs.
There was, we in bottles.
I'm sure you would have.
Them. Like, at the time, I remember being, 16, 17, and thinking it was the coolest thing because I guess, actually being considerate to human beings hadn't quite occurred at that state in the early 2000s. I was a product of that, but retrospectively, Daphne and Celeste deserved a better crack of the whip than I think
they did come back in like a later year. But Daphne and Celeste, followed by Blink 182, followed by Rage Against the Machine, followed by Slipknot, Placebo, and then the Stereophonics. I mean, ultimately, out of those, like, who have become the biggest band? I would argue that probably Slipknot ended up being the biggest possible band out of that, and probably in terms of records sold and just in terms of sheer lasting popularity.
I guess you're right. Who'd have thought?
But yeah, absolutely. And then,
I've still never listened to a record. I still couldn't name a track.
That's terrible. They're amazing.
I know. I actually think they are very, very good. And that's a negative on me, not on them.
I'm just looking at some of the other bands going, who are these people and what happened to them?
Well, because back then you had the punk rock stage. There was a dedicated punk rock stage at Reading called the Concrete Jungle.
Yes.
That's where all you got the proper punk bands. Like Blink could play, the main stage, but then you'd have like, bands like Rancid would play the Concrete Jungle.
What a time to be alive. Even 2001, Eminem, Marilyn Manson, Papa Roach, Queens of the Stone Age.
That was the Naked Show. That was the show where their old bass player just turned up naked.
Brilliant. Couldn't do that. I don't think you could probably do that now. Brilliant. What a time to be a teenager. And that's what I'm going to Limp Bizkit at the age of 35.
Wow, that's what you're doing.
Yep.
But okay, so away from music, let's talk about some guitar stuff, as that's kind of what we're here to do. Obviously, Matt, you've been away for a month. There's been NAMM, not a massive amount of releases at NAMM. We've spoken about a lot of them, in your absence, and we're going to come back to a few awesome ones later in the podcast that we haven't spoken about yet. But whilst you've been away, you purchased something that was
still
absolutely mad. I couldn't believe that this was true when you messaged us to say that this is something that you have done.
I knew it'd be more to you than it would to Jay or Mark.
So dear listener, so we have like our own little WhatsApp chat thing between the four original Guitar Nerds hosts, and when Matt posted what he's purchased, I went absolutely spare. Like, I couldn't believe it. I had to like go into Emma, my partner's office, which is across from me, and stop what she was doing and tell her all about this. Like, I was I messaged my band. Like, I was so excited. Like, Matt and Mark. Mark and Jay couldn't have cared less that this was happening. They barely even replied to the fact this had happened. Matt, please tell the dear listeners the amazing thing you've done.
I was in the pub As all good as all good last minute purchases start. And I had received an email from everyone's favourite used gear dealer, Soundgas.
They are good.
Yes, they have, you know, I guess in some ways I would say they've reinvigorated the interest in a lot of cool vintage and quirky gear. And have certainly been selling a lot of Space Echoes, which has no doubt helped us as well as we're helping them. But they sell a lot of stuff. They are certainly at the upper end of the price market, but their quality is always very good. Everything is always serviced to the nth degree.
That, I think, is the gist. You're not getting a deal as such. What you are getting is something very high quality that you can't get in a lot of other places.
And usually comes with a lot of provenance. Comes, you know, they don't put anything out that's not good enough that you couldn't go and use it straight away, for example. But what they've started doing is auctions. So some gear that perhaps they feel, I don't know, maybe they can't put a price on it, or maybe there's a lot of interest and they feel it'd be better to do an auction. They actually run auctions off their own page. They don't do the auction via like eBay, for example. And recently I was in the pub and got an email. And it was like, oh, ending soon, some of the items in Ed O'Brien's auction. So, of course, Ed O'Brien of Radiohead. And I had seen previously, the week before, that he was selling his Klon, which I think ended up going for $8,000.
What?
I think went for about $8,000. No idea who bought it. Someone's got some serious cash to burn. But the great thing was that 10% off the final price was also donated to charity. And I was like, oh, I wonder what sort of other stuff there is. And there was a Line 6 Delay Pro rack unit. Now, long-term listeners of the podcast will know that I used to have one, foolishly sold it because that's what you do when you just like, oh, I'm not using it. I'll sell it. I'll buy something else. And as soon as I sold it, instantly regretted it. And I was like, you know, recently I was like, oh, I really want to buy another one. And, you know, the prices are just going a bit like haywire at the moment. I certainly feel that the secondhand price is probably crashing a little bit at the moment. I think with inflation, the cost of living. I think secondhand stuff is, I don't know, I think some secondhand products, some highly desirable secondhand products have been like hyperinflated over the last like 2 years. And I think that bubble is perhaps bursting.
I really hope that it is, because secondhand stuff is, I mean, I say this as a person that I sell an awful lot of secondhand stuff, so that's terrible if it bursts.
But, I know, maybe not good for you, but
No, but actually I am more interested in the fact, I don't want to rip people off. I am more interested in buying, and to be honest, the market at the moment for buying is, it's hard to see why you would buy secondhand at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things that I've seen go secondhand to the same price as they are new. It's just that you can't buy them new, and people, you know, supply and demand. Yeah. But
well, you know, we spoke about this, you know, on our private aforementioned WhatsApp with the other fellas about the, you know, the signature models of punk rockers from the 90s at the moment, like. The fact is that Mark Hoppus P basses, but that's the precision bass that's in a jazz bass body, that is the Mark Hoppus Blink 182 signature model, that was $599 off the shelf at GAK, you know, sort of pounds, that is, dear listener, is now selling for £1,100 on Reverb, you know, quite comfortably, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, and I was saying, you know, in previous weeks that, things like all the Moog pedals and stuff, you know, have been getting like crazy prices. And I'm starting to see like people have had them for crazy prices for quite some time and then not sold them. And then they're like,
right,
I need to sell it. So I'm, you know, I need to take a deal on it or whatever. Anyway, back to the story of this auction. So I guess they decided to put it up for an auction for a reason. And I just don't know if that's perhaps the way that maybe their customers purchase things or what, or whether I just caught this at the right time. But I put a bid on it and I was like, given what they normally sell for, I was like, there's absolutely no way I'm gonna win this. But I put the bid on.
Oh, so you weren't even bidding almost seriously?
Yeah, I was sort of like, I'll put something that I bid what I was willing to spend on it. I wasn't going to be like, I'm going to bid like crazy money because it's Ed O'Brien or anything. I was like, I think this is what it's worth. I think what they're going for is perhaps maybe too much money. But then I was like, at least some of it goes to charity. So whatever I've bid, you know, some's going to charity. And the thing about the sound gas auctions is when you bid, it adds an extra 5 minutes onto the time. There was a big boom of a similar type auction website that was like supposed to be like the anti eBay for a while. I don't even remember. There was like, oh, I got a new MacBook for £17. Like, this was like 10 years ago, because basically the auction started at like 1 minute to go at 99p, but every time you bid, it added like 30 seconds on. Like a real auction, I guess, is the main thing.
Yeah.
So so anyway, so I put a bid on it, and that was it. The price never changed. And I was like, wow, that is amazing. So long story short...
Wait, you only did one bid?
I only did one bid. So long story short, I bought Ed O'Brien's Line 6 Delay Pro.
For 99p.
No, I did not pay 99p for it. I paid a reasonable price for it. And I have no idea what it was used on. I think a lot of the gear, if I remember, let me just have a look at the Klon. I think, yeah, auction for Ed O'Brien Klon that he used for King of Limbs and a Moonshaped Pool. I don't know if that was the same for everything.
Surely with someone like Ed O'Brien, he has to at least tell you what he used it on.
Well, apparently, I did actually message Ed O'Brien afterwards and said, oh, I bought your delay pro, and we were talking about some stuff, and he's got some of the RE pedals, and we were talking a bit about that, and I was like, oh, it's amazing. He was like, I've just got too much stuff, and I'm like, oh, I'm not surprised. You've probably got more than enough delay pedals ever. So don't know. Apparently it ships with provenance. I don't know if it's going to come with a letter being like, I used it on this.
Hello, I am Ed O'Brien.
I really hope he's like, yeah, I used it for like all of this stuff. There's a great website, actually. It's a short segue. There's a website called The King of Gear,
yes.
Which is the ultimate website devoted on, as the person puts it, a site devoted to how Radiohead make all those funny noises. and they go in insanely deep into the world of everything that they use. So
what would you like this unit to have been used on? So to be clear, this is the rack mount version of the DL4.
This is the rack mount version of the DL4, exactly the same as the DL4, apart from, if I remember. Well, obviously, you've got MIDI and 128 presets. It's stereo in, stereo out, like the main one, but you've got input controls. And I think there is one extra mode, if I remember rightly. I don't know how I'm going to use it yet. I think the reason I sold the last one was I just didn't really incorporate it. I just sort of had it in a rack and was sort of using it occasionally. Right. And okay. I'm sort of like want to incorporate it in with some MIDI. Obviously, I've got the Filter Pro as well. So I don't know. Maybe we keep talking about doing this pedal board build off. And maybe I'll see if I can bend the rules and outsource some rack gear into it.
Isotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on isotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35 1,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive, and as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
So yeah, your question then, Joe, what record would I have liked, or track would I have liked to use up? I've been listening to a lot of the Kid Amnesiac, like re-release of Kid A and Amnesiac. And that is... I love those records because they're the, I think as someone at GAC put it once, Radiohead's bleepy bloopy phase, which I was like, yeah, I'm totally into that. I think it's amazing. So I don't know. I guess that record came out in what, 2000?
Oh my God. What? Sorry, the rack mount version of the DL4 came out in 2000.
I guess it came out a similar time to the DL4, which was what, 1999, 2000. So likelihood that it might have been used.
It's horrible that I still think of that as a new product.
I know, don't. I'm guessing, yeah, probably in Rainbows, maybe Moonshaped Pool, maybe right. King of Limbs. But I mean, I love In Rainbows. That's an amazing record. Obviously, the most recent record, Moonshaped Pool, is... Ah, it's all good. There isn't a bad Radiohead song out there, Joe.
There isn't. There isn't. That's very true. Moonshaped Pool, I definitely... I disagree fundamentally with my girlfriend Emma on this. I think Moonshaped Pool sounds a bit like some B-sides. But don't get me wrong, it's still very good.
Well, I think the interesting...
The B-sides by Radiohead are still better than most things any band will ever release. I'm just, you know...
Yeah,
it doesn't have the finished vibe to it that King of Limbs or Kid A or anything Amnesiac has.
Yeah, I think. I think the thing with Moonshaped Pool is most of the tracks are old tracks, right? That a lot of them were. Of tracks they've been working out for a very long time, but I think every Radiohead album is just its own tiny entity in a musical universe, isn't it? Nothing is consistent. Everything is different, and everything is. I think it's probably one of the albums I've listened to the least. But my first real Radiohead album I went out and bought was what was the one I'm thinking of? What's the one that came out after? How to the Thief. Yeah, that was the first Radiohead record I bought. Because I think that was the first one that came out after I got into Radiohead.
Wow. OK Computer was mine, was the point that I was getting into music.
Ah, man. Imagine going back and listening to that record for the first time.
I remember being a kid and not understanding it. I remember, not getting it, you know, almost to a negative extent, because it was just so brilliant.
Yeah, I think... and I think it probably, considering what they'd released in their other two albums, a lot of people must have just been like, and there's a great interview, I think, with Tom York, a quote from Tom York after they played Glastonbury. And he was like, couldn't hear myself for the whole show. It's Glastonbury 97. And apparently they walked off stage being like, that's it. That's the end of our careers. Like, it was terrible. And you're just like, no, far, far from it. Apparently they hated that gig because they couldn't hear themselves and there was loads of on stage issues, and you're just like, absolutely smashed it, bruv. Anyway, yes. So that should be arriving on my doorstep soon, and I'm hoping it's got all of his presets on it, and I plug it in and I sound just like Radiohead, and I write the next OK Computer and everything is all right.
I assume that is literally what will happen next.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I want to return this. I didn't write OK Computer 2, and I'm really disappointed.
Well, we will see. We will see. Now, over the last couple of weeks, Matt, you and I both got new Thorpe FX pedals. And I want to talk about Thorpe FX because, obviously, dear listener, no matter where you're from, Thorpe FX are making some of the best quality pedals you can possibly buy at the moment. And I feel like even though Adrian Thorpe has been on the podcast a bunch of times, I almost feel like I don't talk about his pedals enough because they are extraordinarily good. It's just that you expect them to be extraordinarily good. So I guess they almost accidentally get less podcast time because I'm like, oh yeah, this is good. But you, Matthew Knight, got one of the new compact fuzzes, I believe.
I did. So Mr. Thorpe himself sent me a Boneyard, which was their limited edition kind of take on all of the tone benders in one. These were limited edition, so sorry to anyone who didn't get one. But I have had very little time with it. Apologies, Mr. Thorpe, if you're listening to this, but I've been on holiday taking a break. But I thought it was very good because obviously there's been a lot of tone bender inspired things as of late.
It's been the year of the tone bender, hasn't it?
There's been a lot of tone bender. And I think what's nice about this is obviously, you know, the great thing about Thorpe, and every time he's come on the podcast and we talk to him a lot, is that, you know, he is just so into what he does at such a minute, like, level detail in terms of the way things are built, in terms of the components used, in terms of the quality of the components used, in terms of doing something different, in terms of just, I don't know, everything. And I think the fact as well that they've also got Dan Coggins from Love Pedal and then Dinosaural, now obviously a full-time member of the development team with Thorpe, just the sheer level of detail going into this. And amazing the range of sounds that you can get out of it, considering the sort of, I guess, minimal amount of control. So, you know, I think as my friend Stefan put it on Guitar Pedal X, his blog. So it's a germanium multibender. So Mark 1, 1.5, 2, 3, and 4. And effectively, you've got a tone bypass, which is a common feature, tone bypass foot switch, common feature on a lot of Thorpe pedals, that just cut out the tone stack, give you a bit of a volume boost, give you a kind of different vibe. You've then got a switch that goes between two transistors or three transistors. Two or three kind of, again, varies between the different tone benders that have come before it. And then just level, attack, which is gain, and then feed, which is volts. So obviously you've got that kind of, you can go a whole bunch of sort of spluttery sounds to something a little bit more
Now that is the feature that you want. He has thought things through there. That is what you want from a fuzz pedal these days, to be able to do both.
Absolutely.
To be able to do splutteriness but able to do that sort of thick fat thing as well.
Yeah, and I think the tone bypass is always a really good thing for me as well, because it gives you kind of like a boost without actually being like I guess like a volume boost, or like, you know, making things much louder. It just gives you a kind of different vibe and a different kind of feeling. And obviously the original ones didn't really have a tone control on them. They were just like volume and fuzz level. So the fact that you can switch it in and out, I think is quite nice. But the bias control is always good, because when you feed it more volts, obviously you get a bit more headroom and things sort of tighten up a little bit more. And then when you sag it all the way down, it gets all spluttery and, you know, kind of nasty. So again, just a really, really good, sort of multi-fuzz, I guess, especially for tweaking and messing around and a bunch of different sounds. They only made 250, and they've been...
Really that few? Wow, I didn't know that.
I've been seeing that there's been some secondhand sellers, you know, trying to ask for astronomical prices. So, you know, maybe I'll just never open mine and it'll just be sealed forever. And then I'll sell it in 50 years' time on my deathbed. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to plug it in and put it straight on a pedal board, Velcro that bottom, wipe off the serial number. but yeah, no, I'm really excited to, well, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to attempt to do this pedal board build off at some point. And I really kind of want to put one of those on the pedal board, something like this. I think very, you know.
Do you think the Boneyard will make it there as your fuzz of choice?
I think so. We've got a lot of news stories to get through, and whether we'll actually get through them all. But there's a couple of pedals that have come out in the last couple of weeks. I'm like, oh, maybe that could go on the pedal board. I still haven't rebuilt the pedal board that I had before. And obviously, I've got a lot of new things and a lot of things tucked away in boxes, but I need to do it quickly because we're going to attempt to try and move house, and a lot of my stuff is going to need to go into storage, so I need to try and put something together pretty quickly before I tuck all the boxes away in storage for 6 months.
Wow, that sounds awful.
I don't know what I'm going to be able to do without it, to be honest.
Well, yes. I mean, I spoke about this previously without you on the podcast, but certainly the more time I have with it, the better I am finding it. I got the Thorpe FX Fat General, their compressor, and it is everything I want in a compressor because it does that really squashed vintage thing. But because it has a blend, I can actually see everyone, bass players, they love a multi-band compressor because it does the job of a compressor without sounding like it's a compressor. And what we mean when we say that is when you end up over compressing, it sounds bad. Or a lot of people think it sounds bad. And so the great thing about multi-band compressor is it can compress your low and your high end and everything in between, and it can do it just right because it's compressing it differently for your various bands of EQ. Whereas a simple old school compressor, you're either going to be letting through a bunch of your high end, or you are going to be compressing your high end correctly and your low end is going to be all over squashed. You know, so and that there's a time and a place for that tone sort of thing. But most modern, certainly bass players, I don't know how it applies to guitarists, but certainly with bass players, they want the consistency. The great thing about the Fat General is simply thanks to that blend control, I can get all the squishiness, which gives me that sort of John Paul Jones compression style tone.
Mm.
I can get all of that, but I also, because it's blendable, I can still get the dynamics that you need for modern bass playing. And it's shockingly unique, that sort of being able to balance things out like that. It is an extraordinarily good compressor, the Fat General. I've been having a great time with it.
Yeah, I think I think for you, you'll probably get more use out of a compressor, not just as a bass player, but playing gigs. And I just think, I don't know, whenever I've had, I guess maybe this is the opposite of what most people would say, but a lot of people like a compressor if they're maybe a home player because they can have things a bit louder and a bit more consistent
at
home. But I always found that I just left it on all the time, and then you sort of, well, I guess we talk about make gooders, but when you're compressing your sound all the time, I don't know, I prefer things to be a little bit more open and uncompressed if I'm just playing at home. I think maybe if you're playing a gig or something and you're just trying to like even out some sounds maybe. But yeah, I guess for me, compressor is a great effect if you're maybe recording or doing something like that. But just to leave it all on all the time if you're playing at home, I'm not so sure. Not to say that this pedal is not worth it, because I totally
understand what you're getting at. Yeah, I completely feel like I find it very difficult to, for example, I haven't like you know, my band, we're in the middle of like mastering a record, so we're not band practicing at the moment. So as much as I really love the Fat General, the only time I've had to try it is at home, and honestly, that's not a good a good way to try out a compressor, because what compressors are, certainly for bass, is they're placing me in the mix. So what I want a compressor to do is I need to have a drum kit and the guitars and the keyboards and the saxophone all around me. And I need to still be able to hear all the treble coming out of my bass. That's something I want from a compressor. I want it to keep all that high end in the mix, but also to keep everything else, all my fundamentals, really consistent.
Mm.
And you can never tell until you actually... in that space, you know, it's impossible. I'm like, you know, I'm sitting at home being like, this sounds great, and it really does sound great on its Todd, but I need to hear it in the environment to really get a kind of a true feel for it. So yes, I totally understand what you're saying. You know, compressors are definitely a in-band situation, certainly for bass, certainly unless you're doing tic-tac. You know, compressors are going to be a much more subtle thing anyway.
Mm. Yeah, but I think overall that anything, any compressor that you kind of want to use more of in your kind of sound and your set needs to be parallel, I think, because you want to be able to blend in that that dry signal. And yeah, why not buy a Thorpe one, because it uses all the best components. And there you go.
Well, exactly. And on that subject, I think maybe we should talk about the Thorpe effects, the Scarlet Tunic.
Yes, indeed.
Which, of course, an analog amp emulator that is designed to capture the feel and the sound of Syd Barrett's Selma treble and bass 50, this is a totally new kettle of fish for Thorpe to be going down.
Yeah, I think what's really cool with this is that I think it's something they've been working on for like a number of years. And I've heard it in anger, as it were, live on stage when I saw Nick Mason's Source Full of Secrets a couple months ago. So Lee Harris, who plays guitar, one of the guitar players in that band, obviously it was kind of his request.
Yes, I guess. This the project is very much Lee Harris's concept, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah. So he kind of, you know, was trying to recreate that early sort of psychedelic Syd Barrett guitar sound, which was a sort of Selma treble and bass. And you know, he was like, but he didn't know what that amp was at the time. And as he started to get into it, he's like, oh, it's this Selma. And then he was like, oh, well, nothing really sounds like a Selma, and I can't really take one out on tour, and they're unreliable. And, you know, went out to Thorpe, and it turns out that Thorpe and Dan Coggins have one. And they actually, you know, kind of use that to kind of, you know, create that sound of that amp in a box, effectively. But, you know, very much, I think I watched an interview with Lee on Anderson's actually talking about today, and said very much along the lines of, you know, almost like that Origin thing. So you can use it in front of your existing amp, you know, kind of a clean pedal platform, maybe amp, and then use this to kind of invigorate your amp into that kind of Selma style. Or you could use it into like a power amp and kind of use this almost as your amp slash preamp. It's all analog. It's obviously all just designed to be that kind of, I think, truly an amp in a box. I know that's an overused phrase perhaps, but listening to it, I think it really is.
I actually think this is the perfect term for that, because here's the problem. When people go, it's a Marshall in a box, I'm very much like, why don't you just buy a Marshall? You know, why don't you just get that amplifier that you want? Because if you want that Marshall sound, that's probably the only sound you want. Just get Marshall. With this, no one actually wants to sell them a treble and bass 50 all the time, because they do one thing very well and everything else not very well. And I love the sound of them, but certainly I know one player who uses a Selma treble and bass 50, and they use it alongside another amp. You know, because it's such a specific tonal thing. Just to be able to have that amplifier in a single pedal that you can actually bring in and out is actually very, very useful. Everything I've heard of this pedal, I'm like, damn. I mean, I almost feel like you're underselling it by being like Selma in a box. This is also one of the best drive pedals I've ever heard, like in its own right. You know, this is wonderfully articulate and bright and stabby and all that harmonic percolatory goodness.
Yeah.
But, you know, also a preamp.
Yeah, I think it, you know, the fact that it's got, you know, that transformer in it just means that it's just more reactive to your playing. And that's kind of what you want from an amp in a box. You know, it's not just diodes and transistors kind of emulating that sort of vibe, you know, it's realistically an actual, you know, almost like amp in there that you're kind of, you know, you're pushing hard and, you know, using to be dynamic in your sound. So I think this is really, really cool. And the fact that they kind of also make sure it does the Voxy thing and a bit of the you know, high watt DR-103 type thing, I think is impressive, and I'm sorely tempted. I think it could be a really, really good bit of kit.
I think it's a great product. I really think it's a very, very good product for just a utilitarian piece of gear that's going to sound blooming great, and it's made by a company that we know make incredibly high quality bits and bobs. Like, I've got a lot of time for this. This I'm into. You know, I touched upon it at the start of the podcast. I'm like, I'm going through a big sort of like, I don't care about anything that's not a real thing anymore. And this Thorpe effect, I appreciate this is actually an emulation of an amplifier, but, you know, it's a real proper analog piece of kit, and it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I think that with, you know, go for that and, you know, even sort of like one of those power stage type pedals. I mean, that and a Electro-Harmonix Power Stage 30 or whatever it's called, and a few delay pedals, and I think you'll be well away.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. Now, there was another pedal that's come out this week, in fact, Matt, that you were pretty excited about, and it was from Keeley. Keeley, who just seem to put out consistently absolutely fantastic pedals.
Yeah. Do you know what? I just on a separate side now, I was thinking about this the other day about Keeley, and when I saw this, and I was like, you know, I know Robert Keeley is known as a bit of a legend, you know, in the guitar community. I know guys like Blake know him really well, and he's known for just being a great DSP engineer and a great designer. And obviously you forget that his start, I think a lot of people now would forget that his start was in like modding pedals, especially Boss pedals. And people would have known him for the BD2 mods.
I totally agree. I think people forget now. He's so established now that it's like, man, well, I remember Keeley as being like these really bootleg Boss pedal sort of mods, you know, that you could get at the start of the 2000s, you know.
I think he was one of the, well, he was like the first person to really go out there and sort of mod it, and, you know, and then he's sort of done his own thing, and, you know, the stuff that he's been putting out, and especially the stuff recently like this, or like the Echoes, for example, where it's so multifunctional in such a small pedal enclosure, I'm just super, super impressed. So this is the his recent release is the Halo, the Andy Timmons Dual Echo. So Andy Timmons, amazing guitar player, certainly a guitarist's guitar player, and has been really one of the only people live streaming to a super high quality for a very long time, and, you know, with a great, great sound quality. And he's got a great rig, great overall sound, but yeah, he has this kind of Halo guitar sound. I don't know what the pedal is that he normally uses. I've known people talk about the Halo guitar sound as maybe being something of like the Electro-Harmonix Deluxe Memory Man, but they're saying like because it's got that the repeats have that kind of like Halo effect, you know, they become very ethereal. But they're saying in addition to Andy's signature Halo sound, there's numerous other rhythmic delays in here, including quarter note, dotted note, stereo rack mounted analog delay, and a vintage multi-head tape echo. So again, I think it's all about stuff that sits in the mix that kind of gives this sort of rhythmic sound that's kind of got a reverb like diffusion to it. And, you know, out of the box, even when you look at it, you're like, it'll be easy enough to understand, but you know it's going to sound good. So you've got two foot switches, you've got two different delays that you can switch between, you can have different obviously rhythms on them.
Yeah, the foot switches are A and B, which is interesting. It's not like a tap tempo and a on off sort of thing.
So I think the idea is that you can have, I think you can have both on at once. I'm sure you can. I was reading it earlier and then I've sort of forgotten. But up to 1,500 seconds of delay time. Obviously, it's digital, but it's mimicked quite a lot of analog delay sounds. You've got 2-foot switches to switch between two sounds, as well as stereo in, stereo out. You can then also flick between presets, and you can remotely flick between two different delays, which I thought was very, very cool. Like someone like me using a switcher, I thought I liked the idea of being able to switch between two different delay sounds, like a short or a long or something like that.
Yes, that's exactly what you want this pedal to be able to do.
Yeah, because the only thing I would say is when you've got 2-foot switches that close together, it's the same as like Chase Bliss and stuff like that. It's just like, it's very easy to hit both. Rather than just the one, especially.
I was actually going to mention that very thing. Like, when you get single pedals with 2-foot switches, it's like, it's great that you've done this. You know, no one can use this outside of their bedroom.
Yeah, exactly. And that's no discredit to Keely or anyone. But it's just like, it's one of those things. It's like, if you've got a switcher or you can, you know, remote switching, I guess, and an expression pedal, that's what you want. Because trying to tip two at once, nightmare. I'd almost leave this on all the time and then just have a pedal that switches between the two delays. 8 factory presets. You can use one of the foot switches for tap tempo, infinite hold, and then changing presets as well. So very, very multifunctional, but just overall, just a nice take on delay that, you know, you could on the face of it say has been overdone. But then you listen to it and you're like, no, it sounds great. Like, it definitely sounds unique enough. I've watched loads of the demo videos. I think it sounds amazing. So I'm super impressed that it's a kind of delay that, yeah, I mean, it's a delay pedal, but it just does a whole bunch of other sounds that I think I can really get behind.
I don't think I've ever seen a delay pedal in this form factor, which, dear listener, is a single pedal form factor, with as many jack inputs as this. 6.
Yeah. Even I was thinking even with like Chase Bliss. Obviously, you've got MIDI on Chase Bliss, but yeah, stereo in and out. Plus, you've got your remote switching and an external tap tempo, or you can have expression in. I'm super impressed.
So many to fit into this pedal.
Not only that, obviously all the knobs on the top panel have alternate controls as well. So you've got time level.
Yeah. So time is a high pass filter, levels saturate, feedback is the alternative control, rate is tone, depth is rhythm. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So super, super detailed. You know, obviously you can do kind of like a trail sort of true bypass mode, like all the stuff you'd expect. But I really like this. I think this is a really, I mean, the demo playing was amazing, but then, yeah, you only have to watch some of the demo videos and you're like, yeah, this sounds excellent. And I think good enough for kind of more of that kind of classic guitar type guitar playing like Andy Timmons does, all the way through to something. If you look at like Stefan from, you know, Pedal Zone, you know, and you know, his kind of like post-rock ambient type stuff as well. I think it's all great for that. So yeah, I'm super, super keen. Not available, I think, for another couple of weeks. Doesn't seem to be on many UK retailers at the moment. £319 in English pounds, $299, I think. But I'm...
That is the expensive end of the service.
Yeah, I definitely think things are getting a little bit more expensive now, as people have started commenting in general, but I think, you know, it just made me realize how many like delay pedals and reverb pedals have come out recently, and a few more that we haven't even talked about on the podcast. But yeah, and maybe you could say expensive, but I think for what you get in terms of feature set, I would say probably worth every penny.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic pedal. I didn't mean to sort of almost, you know, dismiss that of it. I think it's a great effects pedal. I feel like we're experiencing a time period where everything is becoming more expensive, you know.
Yes,
you
know, I think things
like the Meris LVX. So like, you know, we've talked in the past about like Chase Bliss. I almost feel we're single-handedly responsible for changing the bar of what price was.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. I think there's a lot of people out there who'll be like, oh, things are so expensive. And it's like, yeah, things are expensive, but you know, if you think about
on the other end of the spectrum, we've never seen pedals so cheap.
Exactly. Sort of. I mean, you know, I don't know whether this is a good parallel or not, but there's a famous chef in the UK called Tom Kerridge who runs the only 2-star Michelin pub in the UK. So Michelin star is like obviously the rating system. You go between 1 and 3. Obviously, all 3 are very difficult to get, but a 2-star Michelin pub is like the fanciest pub food you could ever imagine. And it's me and Amy looked on the menu. I'm like, oh my god, like steak and chips is £100, and you're just like, that's too expensive for steak and chips. And then we sort of like googled it a bit, and he's like, look, I run, you know, a pub. I pay my staff all really well. None of them are on minimum wage. All paid for the jobs they do properly. You know, we invest so much time in like the experience and staff. That's what we charge. And I think that's the same thing with like guitar pedals now. If you look at Chase Bliss, you're like, yeah, they could probably sell the CXM for $499, but it also means that they would probably be like underpaying all their staff and, you know, cutting corners. And I think that's the thing now, isn't it? But like you say, you can go super cheap if you want. And there's some great pedals out there for not a lot of money. But I think the people that are charging a bit more, it's because it's good for their, you know, it's great for their business that they can probably do that and pay their staff. And, you know, I think that's one thing that I guess we've seen a lot over the last 6 or 7 years, especially, is just like how good not only the company, the pedals coming out are, but the companies behind those pedals are and how much they love doing what they do.
Yeah.
You know, and every single staff member, Chase Bliss, Old Blood Noise, you know, all of those guys, I think that's the price you pay. And if you don't want to pay it, get out.
Well, you know what? There's plenty of options out there. So if it's not for you, there's loads of options that are way more affordable. I am absolutely the poorest member of the Guitar Nerds original host, but I also absolutely spend the most on gear because I blooming love it. So it's nothing to do with status. It's to do with I really, really love gear, and I love buying stuff and trying stuff and checking out new, weird, cool things. And that's why I invest money in the brands that I do. And if you don't want to, that's cool. Like, there are options for you. But yeah, like, never begrudge the brands that want to charge a bunch for the things they've put time and effort into.
No, absolutely. You know, I think you buy from the brand as much as anything, don't you? And you know, you support and the people. That's why we talk so highly about the brands that we do, because not only do we love the pedals, we love the people that make them, and that's very important. Very important indeed.
Exactly, man. And on that note, this is all the time we have for on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can join us on Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we're going to be going over and talking about more guitar stuff. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month gets you this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special and our entire back catalog. $10 gets you a lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favorite social media platforms. Join us on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.